A present from William.
The part about Christmas I don't like, said Ginger, is having so many relations round. I never did care much for relations.
Aunts are the worst, said William with a sigh. Always making such a fuss about nothing at all, just because you make a quiet noise on a trumpet or something like that. We had one last year that said my mouth organ went right through her head. Well, it stands to reason it couldn't have done. I suppose she's got a solid head, same as everyone else.
We're having one this year, said Ginger gloomily. A sort of cousin.
Cousins aren't as bad as aunts, said William.
This one will be. She's a sort of second cousin, and she's older than my mother. And she's bringing a cat. Now it's going to be a rotten Christmas. I've not got any money to buy people Christmas presents with.
Nor have I, said Henry.
Nor have I, said Douglas.
I've not had any money for so long, said William pathetically, that I've almost forgotten what it feels like to have money.
They say it's the thought that matters, not the actual present, said Ginger. But I've noticed that they're jolly sniffy when you give them the thought and not the actual present.
The others agreed. They agreed every year. What about this sort of cousin with the cat? Said William hopefully to Ginger.
Perhaps you'll give us a tip or something. No, she won't, said Ginger. She hasn't got any money. She's poor. She's a sort of housekeeper to someone. She went to keep house for an old uncle, what was supposed to be rich, and then when he died, it turned out he hadn't any money.
Doesn't sound as if she'd be much use, said William. We shall just have to think of some other way. Ginger's mother's second cousin arrived from Scotland that evening, and Ginger met the outlaws after supper to report.
Well, I suppose she's awful, they said morosely.
Oh, no, said Ginger. She's not bad. Come round and have a look at her tomorrow. She's called Miss Carol.
They arrived the next day to inspect her, and found her small and thin and grey-haired and eager.
Oh, I'm so glad to meet Ginger's friends, she said. I've got some sweets for you all in my bag.
She was shy and deprecating, and they liked her at once.
Oh, and I'm sure you my cat, she went on. He belonged to my Uncle Josiah when I used to keep house for him, and when he died, my uncle had him stuffed and left him to me in his will.
Their interest rose when they heard that the cat was not a real cat. She took them up to her room and showed them a stuffed cat that sat on the chair by her bed. It was a large, sleek-looking animal with glass eyes that seemed to hold a sinister gleam.
"Oh, poor puss," said Miss Carol, putting her hand upon the sleek, black head. "My uncle was bedridden, and Puss used to sit by his bedside, looking at him for hours. I didn't really like poor Puss, I'm afraid. There seemed to be something so uncanny about him. Pluto, my uncle called him. Such a heathenish name. Then he died, and my uncle had him stuffed and put on the chair by his bed. And then he left Puss to me in his will. And so I've had him ever since. I've got quite fond of him now, in a way."
The stuffed cat fascinated the outlaws. They liked to go up to Miss Carol's bedroom and look at it, and hear stories about Miss Carol's Uncle Josiah. He seemed to have been a queer old man with a distorted sense of humour. He loved to play unpleasant tricks on his niece, to hide her thimble or needlework beneath his pillow and watch her hunting for them. He'd not been a pleasant old man. But still, she excused him with her gentle smile, it amused him, and it didn't do me any harm. The outlaws took her round the village and showed her their favourite haunts. She confided her ambition to them, which was to own a small cottage in the country. Attracted by her shy friendliness, they told her about the presents they would like to give their mothers but couldn't afford to. With her help, they chose, in their imagination, a new travelling clock for Ginger's mother, a silk scarf for William's, a cut-glass scent spray for Henry's, and a new leather handbag for Douglas's. They felt strangely comforted and exhilarated by the process. It was the next day that the idea occurred to William of introducing Jumble to Pluto. They went up to Miss Carol's bedroom, but Miss Carol wasn't there. Pluto, however, was sitting on the chair by the bed and wearing his usual leer. They stood round, gazing at him.
"I bet she wouldn't mind us just taking him down and holding him up for Jumble to see,"
said William. "It couldn't possibly do any harm." The others agreed, and slipping Pluto beneath his coat, William led the way down to the back garden, where Jumble awaited them. William slowly drew Pluto from his hiding place. Jumble cocked his head on one side and wagged his tail. "He likes it," said William. He set Pluto upon the grass and stood back to watch Jumble's obvious friendliness deepen into an abiding affection. Jumble approached, still wagging his tail, then suddenly met the baleful stare of the sinister green eyes. It seemed to madden him. He sprang at the leering Pluto and seized him savagely by the neck. The outlaws leapt to the rescue, but Jumble ran into the bushes with his victim, shaking and chewing him, ignoring William's threats and entreaties. At last he dropped Pluto and ran off into the woods. The outlaws gathered round Pluto, examining him with increasing dismay. Jumble had chewed the black neck till the head fell over limply to one side, and the green eyes seemed to gaze upward in helpless bewilderment. They set to work at once, but all their efforts failed to restore the head to its old uprightness.
"She'll be mad," said William apprehensively.
"In a way, I hope she will be," said Ginger. "It'll be worse if she's not mad than if she is."
They broke the news very gently, standing before her in an abashed row, and finally bringing out Pluto from beneath William's coat. She went pale with horror when she saw him.
"Oh, dear," she said. "Oh, but of course it's not your fault, dear children, so you mustn't worry about it."
It was, as Ginger had said, worse than if she'd been mad. The incident seemed to bring the outlaws face to face with the stern realities of life. They had spoilt Miss Carroll's stuffed cat, her only and much-prized possession, and they hadn't any money to buy Christmas presents for their mothers. Depression swept over them as they separated for lunch. But that afternoon, William's face shone suddenly with the light of a great idea.
"I know," he said. "Let's stuff that old Pluto for her again. I bet it's quite easy. We'll stuff it so its head'll stand up same as it used to."
As usual, William's confidence was infectious.
"Right," said Ginger. "Let's go and ask her now."
No, don't let's do that," said William. "It'll be much nicer for it to be a surprise for her."
"Yeah, all right," agreed Ginger. "She's going out to tea this afternoon. Let's go and do it while she's out."
They hung about in the garden until Miss Carroll had gone out. Then they crept silently up to her room. Under William's arm was a bundle of old newspapers and some straw.
"This ought to be all right," he said. "I bet straw and paper is what they use."
Pluto still sat on the chair by Miss Carroll's bed, his head hanging dejectedly onto one side, his green eyes gleaming malevolently upward. William sat down on the floor with Pluto on his knee and examined him.
"Here's where it joins," he said,
and taking his penknife out of his pocket, began to hack away at the unfortunate Pluto's coat.
"I've cut its skin a bit," he said casually, "but I'll stitch it up all right at the end when I'm stitching up the rest."
They watched him with eager, if slightly apprehensive, interest. Having made a large hole, he proceeded to pull out some drab-coloured stuffing, and finally some screwed-up newspaper.
"There," he said triumphantly. "Now I'll start putting it back a bit tighter so it'll go right up its neck and make its head stand up straight. I'll use the stuff in a newspaper what was in it first and then fill up at the end with the stuff I've brought. I bet she'll be jolly pleased."
The others felt less optimistic, but they murmured vague acquiescence.
"It's jolly easy," went on William airily. "I bet I'll set up as an animal stuffer when I'm grown up. It's jolly easy, really. There."
He set the restuffed Pluto upon the hearthrug. It lurched tipsily over onto one side.
"I've not got it sitting quite straight yet," said William. I'll try making it a bit flatter."
The others stared at Pluto in growing dismay. The head lolled even more limply than it had lolled before. The body was a sagging, shapeless mass.
"He's worse than he was," said Ginger gloomily.
"Well," admitted William thoughtfully, "it certainly looks a bit queer.
I better do it again. I expect the old stuff's a bit wore out. I'll use my straw and newspaper.
He took out the stuffing and set to work again. By the time he'd finished, the outlaw's expressions of dismay had deepened to horror. Pluto seemed to have lost all semblance to his former self.
"It isn't like anything," said Ginger faintly.
"It's a bit like a tea cosy," said Douglas.
"Let's say we've made it into a tea cosy for her Christmas present," suggested Henry.
William took out the stuffing and examined Pluto's skin critically.
"I don't think it was ever a very good-shaped cat, even when it was alive," he said. "I bet I could have stuffed a good-shaped cat, all right."
At this moment, as William sat holding Pluto's empty and bedraggled skin in his hand, Miss Carroll entered her bedroom. Intent upon their task, the outlaws had forgotten the time, and their hostess had now returned from her tea party. She stood and gazed at the scene, open-eyed with amazement. William tried to explain.
"Well, you see, we were doing it as a sort of surprise for you, stuffing this old cat so its head would stick up. It's taken us a bit longer than we thought. Well, we've not quite finished yet, as a matter of fact. I'm just going to have another shot.
He gave up.
"We'll save up all our money, when we get any, and have it done for you by a proper stuffer."
Miss Carroll rose to the occasion. She looked distressed and unhappy, but she showed no anger.
"It's quite all right, children," she said. "It was really very silly of me to take him about with me as I did, and you mustn't worry about it. Now let's clear up all the mess, shall we? Oh, what a lot of newspaper."
Yes, explained William. "Some of it's what I brought to stuff it with, and some of it was in it before. The yellow ones are what were in it before."
Miss Carroll picked up the tight ball of ancient yellowed newspaper and opened it out. Then she gave a little gasp of amazement, for inside the tightly folded newspaper was a huge wad of notes, crinkled, crisp, £100 notes, the whole of Uncle Josiah's missing fortune. That had been his final trick on her, to leave it to her, stuffed in the cat she'd always disliked. Miss Carroll, William, Ginger, Henry and Douglas, all tense with excitement, boarded the bus for Hadley. They were all going there on different business. Miss Carroll was going to see the house agent about Honeysuckle Cottage. William was going to buy his mother a silk scarf. Ginger was going to buy his mother a travelling clock. Henry was going to buy his mother a cut-glass scent spray. Douglas was going to buy his mother a leather handbag. It was going to be a jolly fine Christmas after all.